Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Welcome to this episode of the Bureau Briefing. We're glad you're here. We've got Kara Detterman, the Director of User Experience for Consumer Reports, coming on the show to share two amazing stories. One, taking Consumer Reports from a beloved offline brand of over 80 years to an online brand. And second, taking them from a subscription model to a membership model. She's been there for the whole thing. She's been there for over 16 years. But before we get into the show, I've got to thank our sponsors. Look, for agencies, time is money. If you're looking to increase your efficiency and profitability, which you are, you need to check out Voxy. It is the only professional services platform built on the Google Cloud and G Suite. Voxy will free your teams from administrative burdens so they can deliver more value to clients. And you'll be able to drive the outcomes needed to grow the business. Better margins, lower overhead, higher utilization rates, and yes, more revenue. So please give Voxy a look. They are great. And also, thanks to MailChimp. You've heard me talk about what a great partner MailChimp is for the Bureau. But you know what you haven't heard me talk about? That MailChimp wants to be a partner with you. They want you to be part of their partner program. It helps you grow your business on your terms. You'll get exclusive co-marketing opportunities and the chance to promote your business to MailChimp customers. You get priority support 24/7 via email and also great live chat assistance. And you'll get to plan ahead with exclusive partner content, which includes insights from teams across the company, detailed product release notes, customer stories, marketing webinars, and more. So take a look and consider becoming a partner with MailChimp. I'm going to tell you, it's totally worth it. And now let's check in on our conversation with Kara. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. It's Carl. And swinging by the Bureau Studios today, we have somebody who has done a very rare thing in this industry. She has been with the same organization for 16 years. Starting off in 2002 with what I would imagine is kind of the beginnings of their web presence, their web team, all the way up to today where she's the Director of User Experience with Consumer Reports. Welcome to the show, Kara Detterman. How are you?
I'm so great. Thanks so much, Carl.
I'm so glad you're here. You know, we've known each other for a couple of years now, met at the first Design Leadership Camp, saw each other again last year. And one of the things that I've always been just kind of puzzled about is what it's like at Consumer Reports, because it's such a great brand. It's a brand that I feel like I grew up with. And I remember if I saw Consumer Reports magazine, like when I was a kid or whatever, I was like, I wanted to see who wasn't doing good. You know,
yeah,
I wanted
totally.
To see the good stuff in the back. I mean, it was this total rating system. It was comments before there were comments. It was Yelp before there was Yelp, right? So tell me about what it was like joining Consumer Reports at the beginning.
Well, I have to admit, as I was coming in the door for Consumer Reports, I was stepping off of being at another huge kind of internet company, and I didn't really know what I was in for. They were searching for a freelance designer, a digital designer. And I didn't even know the name of the company. I just read, you know, something about how passionate they were as an organization. And I knew that it was totally aligned with what it was that I would love doing. So I applied and I got in. I came in as a consultant. And
okay.
I really just started to get to know what Consumer Reports really was about. I mean, I wasn't one of those people whose mom and dad had Consumer Reports on their coffee table or in their garage. There's lots of folks who've had piles and piles of those magazines in their garage. And I just started to learn more and more about the organization as I started to do projects for them. And it was so endearing how passionate all of the testers were, how wonderful all of the folks who write for the magazine and do the work on a regular basis, what it was that they were really trying to do to change consumers' lives. So I really started there. Most of the people who were at Consumer Reports at the time were print designers.
Right.
Who had kind of learned a little bit of the web. And I was not a print designer. I came straight away right into digital, the digital world, and learned all of that. So coming in, it was a little foreign, trying to figure out how to, I felt like I was speaking a different language sometimes with the folks who were looking at things from a print perspective. But Consumer Reports was rather successful even when I jumped in. There were, even from the beginning, we were one of the very first content providers out there who had a paywall and were charging for content and were successful at doing that. I really had the luck of being able to be a part of that as it was growing. You know, I went from freelance consultant to designer to senior designer to really kind of pulling together the team that was there already, and then basically organizing my own team and really pulling in all of the great user experience talent that we could and helping to start to really help Consumer Reports look at their content from a non-print perspective, which was a challenge. The company was really focused on how to put the magazine out on a regular basis and and what it was that was driving all of this information onto the site was it wasn't reimagined for digital. It really was kind of a replica of the magazine. And it still, even now, there's so much opportunity as far as what the experience online and digitally can be, as opposed to what a print experience is. And that has been really like the gem of it all, and trying to really burst out of what has been the history of where this place has come from into what it really could be, where it really is going to make a difference, which is different than it was, say, 15 years ago. There's a different spot for us now.
And it's interesting because for me, my parents were the parents that had it on the coffee table, not in the garage. And I remember as a kid thinking there are answers in here. You know, that everything that you see, you know, because your parents always tell you, well, be careful where you spend your money because you don't want to buy something that's just not any good. And, you know, Sea Monkeys may be an example. I don't know. I don't think Consumer Reports ever rated Sea Monkeys.
I don't think they did.
We can go back and look at that. But I think the first time I actually became a customer would have been probably around the time, it might have been a little bit before, but the first time I became a customer was probably around the time when you joined, because I remember it was online.
Yeah.
And it was when I was starting to buy appliances.
Right.
Right. When I was just out of college and I needed a washer and dryer, I needed a refrigerator, whatever it might be. But what I remember is I would go in there and I would look, because again, there wasn't any competition really. And then later, I don't know, maybe in my 30s at some point, I canceled. I probably was, you know, a little tight on cash. And there was also all these other things out there. But the thing is, I still get those reminders. I get the emails and I don't unsubscribe because it's kind of like a friend. I feel bad if I were. And I actually resubscribed later and then unsubscribed again. But I wondered, do you have any idea? Is there a go away comeback kind of mentality that happens with Consumer Reports customers?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that actually is one of the things that was really a super focus of recent years, trying to really understand how we could transform from a transactional oriented company where basically I need a dishwasher and I want to buy a dishwasher and I'm going to see the ratings for a dishwasher and then I'm going to go away, or between an experience then that, you know, that holds you over time, right? So we have been very, very transactional, and people absolutely purchase in those kind of moments. But a part of what we've been trying to do recently is more about thinking about engagement over time, affinity, and all of those things that would bring users back on a more continual basis, as opposed to just in that moment of purchase.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely, I mean, not that you aren't a company full of really smart people, but I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, I think that's the right thing to do, because I'm sure you can go back and tell them, well, Carl said, we're doing it right. We're so excited. For me, thinking about what you just said, one of the issues you have when you go out there to review something is who's the source. Mm-hmm. And even if it's CNET, right? Or if it's another, like I go there for electronics all the time, but even then you're kind of like, well, did they really spend the time? Is there anybody influencing them? This or that. And Consumer Reports always felt like that super standalone. You wanted to be a part of that group. And I know that I'm going to say it was within the last year or year and a half that you went through a rebrand mm-hmm. and also kind of repositioned the way that the company interacts with its customers. So talk about that experience. How hard is it for an established brand like Consumer Reports to say we might need to update ourselves a little bit?
Oh, well, it was painfully apparent. I mean, as you're saying, there was fierce competition out there. All of a sudden, there started to be folks that companies that were doing the same thing that we were doing, or it would appear that they were doing the same thing that we were doing. It would look like they were doing it better because they would be doing a better job of presenting it in the experience. Right. And then they would also be doing it for free. So they wouldn't have to actually pay for it. So unlike yourself, who had already kind of known a little bit about the brand, and it's really, we're super, super fortunate that we have a lot of still great affinity for, you know, who CR is and what they stand for. But a lot of the newer audiences really couldn't necessarily tell the difference between, say, what CNET or others were doing and how it was that they would be pulling out money out of their pocket to get the ratings that CR did.
Right.
So it was super, super important that we really started to think about how was it that we were going to be attracting new audiences? How were we going to be positioning ourselves so that we would be relevant? Another challenge was that product shopping is one of those things that may not necessarily have as much pain as it used to be, especially when the company started. So really thinking about what are the biggest consumer issues today? Is it privacy? Is it food safety? What are the things that really are going to make a difference in a user's life, in addition to all the product safety and work reviews that we do? But how can we evolve as an organization? And I would say that it was really under new leadership change several years ago when we were able to completely align on what it was that Consumer Reports really needed to transform into. How can we align what it is that we're doing with our mission and our investigative reporting as well as our reviews so that we can really hone in on the new audiences that are going to make a difference? That's when there was a lot of discussion around how can we reinvigorate this brand. A part of that was what we have looked like. You know, how can mm-hmm. how can we you know, change what we look like to be more accessible, as well as how we sound, and then also in what we create as an experience overall. Again, going back to the not being necessarily so transactional and in the moment, but what would it look like if we were to actually create a membership experience? And how would that need to really change the way that somebody interacts with us over time?
So help me out, because personally, it's always one of these challenges to understand the difference between subscription or membership. Mm-hmm. So what's the big difference in this evolution?
It's a great question. I mean, I absolutely think about the subscription as kind of the transaction. And this idea of membership is really having an affinity for the brand that you belong to. And there are many people who actually already kind of felt like a member. We had a donor part to our company, so we had fundraising as well as many other aspects of outreach and advocacy. So there were a lot of layers to what it was that Consumer Reports did, but they were kind of acting almost in little different silos. So it was about really understanding kind of the end-to-end journey of a user through the experience of being a part of Consumer Reports and how we could connect the different touch points in all of these different facets of how they could become engaged with us. So it's engagement, it's affinity, it's understanding all of those ways in which you really, you know, you feel for a brand. It's kind of the heart, I think.
Yeah. So how did the two evolve together, the rebrand and membership?
It was a massive effort, kind of looking back at it all. and it did happen for quite, it bubbled a lot, you know, before it even kind of started. The rebrand started working with, we started doing a lot of internal soul searching on what it was with our current brand that was not necessarily resonating. Something interesting, the old rating system, it was red for good, black for bad. The icons, the Harvey Ball variation icons that we had. And there was definitely a huge barrier to entry for new users because they needed to have a legend right next to them so that they could see what the icons meant. And what we really wanted to be able to do was to create that approachability, that ease of understanding and that guided feeling, the lower barrier to being able to really engage with us. So a part of what we really tried to start exploring was what would that look like? How could we do data visualizations that would help people understand things? How could we really expand the visual language of what we are able to do? Because the black and white was very limiting. And that's where we partnered with Pentagram and Michael Beirut to work on the logo and the rating system. A lot of our ideas we had kind of brought to the table, and they really helped to jumpstart a really wonderful conversation about what would this really need to look like in all of its renditions. And similarly, so we kind of started with a lot of the visual output, even though we had already started building the concept of membership and what that would really need to look like. The visual output actually took the lead. It happened to be the first thing that we started to do. And with membership, there were a ton of different parallel paths that had to happen in order for that to really work. I mean, there was a whole kind of inside of the building effort of really trying to understand what does it mean from an organizational perspective to shift. How can we align everyone around the vision of membership or this idea of a rebrand? And like I had mentioned to you, some of our leaders, amazing President Marta Tolado, who brought in Leonora Wiener, who was head of brand and product at the time, and really super, super supportive of what it means to evolve a brand. So we had a lot of conversations about what does that mean and how can we speak the same language and bringing everyone along this journey, organizing the business around membership instead of subscriptions. What are the new KPIs look like? What are the engagement angles of that? We have a free tier, which we now have, as opposed to just the hard paywall. What are the ways in which we might bring people into our free tier? And there are many, many features that the teams played around with or looked into. And there were features that then were chosen as the ones that felt like they were from CR. They were ones that not necessarily anybody could have done. And we really were focused on how to make that into something that felt like a bigger benefit for consumers.
I'm curious, how did you communicate this with your existing subscription base that there was going to be this change?
There were emails and there was communication that was sent out on a number of levels about all of the new changes. But interestingly, I mean, I think so I was talking to you about kind of the inside of the building changes, the outside of the building changes regarding all of the messaging. I mean, it was a ton of work to basically re-tier, re-put together all of the messaging that was going out to all of the consumers. And again, our marketing department headed by Kim Steele was wonderful. And again, it wasn't like the donors or the digital product or the print product. It was really a full picture of what that engagement looks like. And how can we make sure that over time we're really talking to the person as far as what we know about them and how we increase the personalization there? I would say that interestingly, from an outsider perspective, you know, I think other than gaining access to some new features and the possibility of maybe becoming a part of a premium tier, there wasn't a huge change for them. I think that even though inside of the building, when we're doing all of this huge like build up on the outside, I feel like there were new features, but it wasn't like we had totally redone the products that they had always known. What we were really trying to do was smartly evolve that experience into something that they really wanted to come back to more and more, in addition to making what they've always known better.
Well, that makes perfect sense, because if there's one thing I think we've all learned, it's that people may complain about stuff, but then when you change it, they complain more. It's like, no, but I knew how it worked. I just didn't like how it worked. And now you've gone and changed it and tried to make it better. I've got to learn something. This is horrible.
Yeah.
No. Why are you doing this? So the response was pretty good?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the features that we've currently launched, they're resonating. I mean, we have a car recall tracker where people can put in their cars, and that has seen a huge response. I mean, so again, and some of these things are plays for what hopefully we'll be able to build out even more. It's not only kind of a research portal, but where you come back for ownership and other life cycle kinds of either purchases or questions, guidance opportunities.
So how does the organization itself, how does Consumer Reports feel about this transition? Is it reinvigorated the company?
I have to say it was one of the most amazing things to watch. Yes, it has. And it was all because of how the leadership was so aligned and how they wanted to make sure that everybody inside of the building was brought along, you know, because unless you have buy-in internally, there's absolutely no way that you're going to be able to make that resonate externally. So that was one of the most amazing things that I had ever experienced, was when we launched the new brand and everybody was wearing green. When you think about it, it's a huge change. I mean, even though that we had had some moments in our past where we had different icons, it was a very bold new move. The organization internally was really brought along that journey, and it was done in a way that I think everybody understood why we were doing it, understood that it was a way for us as an organization to have more impact with consumers. And that is exactly what we have always wanted to do.
Well, that's so amazing. And I really appreciate you sharing that story, because seriously, for the last couple of years since I've met you, I was like, what's going on in there? So I appreciate you swinging by and letting us know.
No problem. Absolutely happy to do that.
And everybody listening, thank you for swinging by, and we'll see you again next week. All the best.